This episode of the Ortho Bullets podcast will go over the topic of hamstring injuries from the knee and sports section on orthobullets.com. Hamstring injuries can occur at any level in the hamstring. It can occur at the myotendinous junction, or it can be an avulsion off the ischial tuberosity. With respect to the myotendinous junction, this is the most common site of rupture, and these injuries often occur during sprinting. Avulsion of the ischial tuberosity is less common, but is typically seen in skeletally immature patients as well as in water skiers. With respect to the mechanism of hamstring injuries, this occurs as the result of hip flexion and knee extension. As far as the pathophysiology, keep in mind that satellite cells play a role in muscle healing following muscle injury. As far as the mechanism of hamstring injuries, they occur as a result of hip flexion and knee extension. And this has been a tested point on past exams, so I'll say it again. Hamstring injuries occur as a result of hip flexion and knee extension. With respect to the pathophysiology, keep in mind that satellite cells play a role in muscle healing following muscle injury. Now, let's go over some relevant anatomy. The hamstring muscles include the semimembranosus, the semitendinosus, and the biceps femoris. The semimembranosus is the most lateral attachment. Again, the semimembranosus is the most lateral attachment. The semitendinosus and biceps femoris, specifically the long head, attach medial to the semimembranosus. Again, the semitendinosus and the long head of the biceps femoris attach medial to the semimembranosus. The biceps femoris has a long head and a short head. The long head, again, attaches medial to the semimembranosus, and the short head originates from the linea aspera. Common characteristics of hamstring muscles include that they originate on the ischial tuberosity, they're innervated by the sciatic or tibial nerve, the blood supply is from the inferior gluteal artery and the profunda femoral artery, and finally, the hamstrings cross and act upon two joints, the hip and the knee, except for the short head of the biceps femoris. With respect to the presentation of hamstring injuries, physical exam may reveal ecchymosis in the posterior thigh. Patients may have a palpable mass in the middle one-third of the posterior thigh, which is specifically seen in myotendinous ruptures. Remember that the normal hamstring to quadriceps ratio is 65%, and patients may reveal a stiff-legged gait in which they are trying to avoid knee and hip flexion. With respect to imaging, radiographs may show an avulsion off the ischial tuberosity, and an MRI may also show avulsion off the ischial tuberosity. Treatment of hamstring injuries can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management involves rest, ice, NSAIDs, and protected weight-bearing for 4 weeks, followed by stretching and strengthening. This is indicated for most hamstring injuries, specifically single-tendon injuries with retraction less than or equal to 1 to 2 centimeters, as well as ruptures at the myotendinous junction. With respect to return to play, this is only allowed when strength is 90% of the contralateral side to avoid further injury. Again, return to play is only allowed when strength is 90% of the contralateral side to avoid further injury. Operative options include operative repair, which is indicated for proximal avulsion ruptures, partial avulsions that have failed non-operative management for 6 months and patients with persistent symptoms. And finally, another indication is at least two tendons that are greater than 2 centimeters retracted in young active patients. The surgical technique involves a transverse incision at the gluteal crease. Remember, protection of the sciatic nerve is extremely important. Next, you will mobilize the ruptured tendons and repair to the ischial tuberosity with the use of suture anchors. With respect to results, remember that it is easier to mobilize acute ruptures than chronic ruptures. And remember that repair of acute ruptures has less sciatic nerve scarring, and chronic ruptures may require sciatic neurolysis. With respect to complications after hamstring injuries, you may see weakness in knee flexion and hip extension. You may see what's known as hamstring syndrome, which is posterior buttock and ischial tuberosity pain, and the treatment of this is surgical release and sciatic nerve decompression. Finally, as we previously mentioned, you may notice sciatic nerve scarring and sciatic neuralgia, which is more often seen in chronic hamstring ruptures. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 35-year-old skier presents with pain in the left buttock and proximal posterior thigh after a fall. On physical exam, he has pronounced bruising in his posterior thigh from a hematoma tracking following the injury. coronal, and axial MRI images show partial avulsion of the right hamstring insertion. He is enrolled in 8 weeks of physical therapy after 2 weeks of rest, icing, and NSAIDs. He returns for follow-up 6 months after his injury and has persistent ischial tuberosity pain with running. Examination confirms focal ischial tuberosity tenderness. Which surgical option is most appropriate? And the choices are 1. Sciatic nerve decompression, 2. Arthroscopic labral repair, 3. Repair to the intertrochanteric crest, 4. Repair to the femoral shaft, and 5. Repair to the ischial tuberosity. The correct answer to this question is 5. Repair to the ischial tuberosity. So this patient has a partial hamstring avulsion injury. If symptoms persist after a period of therapy and rest, operative repair to the ischial tuberosity is indicated. Untreated partial hamstring ruptures may present with residual pain, weakness, and hamstring dysfunction. The mechanism is eccentric lengthening, for example, in the setting of sprinting or cutting. A proposed treatment algorithm is 1. Non-operative management for single tendon avulsions with less than 2 centimeters of retraction, as the ruptured tendon scars to intact tendons. 2. Repair for an acute 3-tendon rupture that is semitendinosus, semimembranosus, and the biceps femoris with retraction of greater than equal to 2 centimeters. 3. Surgery for the young, that is patients less than 50 years old, with 2-tendon avulsions and retraction greater than or equal to 2 centimeters. Bauman et al. Examined the outcomes of operative management of partial hamstring tears in 17 patients. They found no postoperative difficulties with activities of daily living, and no recurrent surgery was required. All patients returned to their preoperative level of activity. They concluded that surgery can lead to good function with low complications and is reserved for patients who have failed nonoperative management. Hoffman et al. Retrospectively reviewed 19 patients with nonoperatively managed complete hamstring avulsions. They found diminished SF12 scores, diminished hamstring strength at 45 degrees and 90 degrees of flexion, that is 62% and 66% respectively, compared with the normal side. They concluded that non-surgical management leads to both subjective functional and objective strength deficits. Moving on to the next question. Axial and coronal MRI images of a 21-year-old male athlete shows a significant amount of swelling and hematoma around the hamstring tendons. The whole ischial tuberosity is denuded of tendon, which is consistent with a complete rupture. He injured his left leg during a hurdling race approximately 1 week ago. What would be the next best step in management of this injury? And the choices are 1. Anti-inflammatory medication and non-weight-bearing for 6 weeks, 2. Urgent CT scan, 3. Hip arthroscopy, 4. Open surgical repair, and 5. Dynamic stretching and progressive mobilization. The correct answer to this question is 4. Open surgical repair. So the MRI described in the question stem showed an acute proximal hamstring tendon avulsion. The next best step in management would be open surgical repair of all tendons to their origin at the ischial tuberosity. To quickly review, athletes participating in sports that require sprinting, jumping, acceleration, and deceleration are at increased risk of sustaining a proximal hamstring tendon avulsion. The greatest predictor of this injury is prior hamstring injury. Other risk factors include increasing age, high training demand, increased body mass index, and tight hip flexor muscles. MRI is the gold standard imaging to identify these images. Open hamstring tendon repair is recommended in athletes when all of the hamstring tendons have avulsed off of their origin or 2 tendons have avulsed and retracted more than 2 centimeters. Cohen et al. Wrote a JAOS article on acute proximal hamstring rupture. They point out that testing the peroneal branch of the sciatic nerve function is important in the physical examination, as injury to this branch will cause weakness of the short head of the biceps femoris and may slow potential postoperative rehabilitation. Lefebvre et al. Reviewed the return to sports after surgical repair of acute proximal hamstring ruptures. They performed a prospective observational study that included 34 patients. Patients returned to sports within a mean of 5.7 plus or minus 1.6 months at the same level in 27 patients, or 79.4% of the patients studied, and at a lower level in 7 patients, or 20.6% of the patients studied. They conclude that surgical repair of acute proximal hamstring ruptures has the potential to significantly improve the functional prognosis of patients with these injuries. Moving on to the next question. Which of the following most accurately describes the primary role of satellite cells? And the choices are 1, to act as an intermediary in the cell signaling pathway for bone remodeling. 2, to regenerate skeletal muscle after muscle injury. 3, to regenerate periosteum after periosteal damage in a child. 4, to bind chemotherapeutic ligands in the treatment of lymphoma of bone. And 5, to express high amounts of Sonic Hedgehog surface protein. The correct answer to this question is 2, to regenerate skeletal muscle after muscle injury. So the primary role of satellite cells is to regenerate skeletal muscle after muscle injury. Satellite cells, also termed muscle satellite cells, are a population of cells within muscle who sit relatively dormant until muscle injury occurs. Satellite cells are then responsible for producing new muscle and new satellite cells in response to the injury. Noonan et al. Review muscle strain injury. They report that histological studies have shown that muscle strain injuries cause a disruption of muscle fibers near the myotendinous junction. The fibers do not tear at the junction, but rather a short distance from it. Acutely, the injuries are characterized by disruption and some hemorrhage within the muscle. By day 2, an inflammatory reaction is evident with the presence of edema and inflammatory cells. By day 7, fibrous tissue has replaced the inflammatory reaction. Gates et al. Reviews muscle-derived stem cells and their role in muscle regeneration. They report one such cell is the satellite cell, which has long been recognized as a quiescent muscle progenitor cell. Following skeletal muscle injury, it divides and fuses with other progenitors to form myofibers. When stimulated with the appropriate growth factors in vitro, satellite cells also have the capacity to differentiate down other lineages, such as osteoblastic, adipogenic, and chondrogenic cell lines. Morgan et al. Report satellite cells are quiescent mononucleated myogenic cells located between the sarcolemma and basement membrane of terminally differentiated muscle fibers. These are normally quiescent in adult muscle, but act as a reserve population of cells able to proliferate in response to injury and give rise to regenerated muscle and to more satellite cells. Moving on to the next question. Concomitant flexion of the hip and extension of the knee is most likely to result in an injury to which structure? And the choices are 1, sartorius, 2, rectus femoris, 3, adductor magnus, 4, biceps femoris, and 5, tensor fasciae latae. The correct answer to this question is 4, biceps femoris. So flexion of the hip and extension of the knee most likely would injure the hamstring. The hamstring is composed of the semimembranosus, semitendinosus, and biceps femoris, and all three components originate at the ischial tuberosity. The article by Orava reviewed 8 patients with proximal hamstring rupture and reported that there is an eccentric component to the injury with forceful contraction of the hamstring with simultaneous lengthening of the muscle with hip flexion and knee extension. The Level 4 study by Klingel reviewed 11 patients treated operatively for proximal hamstring rupture and found 91% return of muscle strength postoperatively. And moving on to the final question, a 15-year-old boy sustained an avulsion injury of the ischial tuberosity while running the hurdles. The same mechanism in an adult athlete would most likely result in which of the following injuries? And the choices are 1, hamstring myotendinous junction rupture, 2, pelvic ramus fracture, 3, hamstring muscle belly rupture, 4, hamstring tendinous insertion rupture, and 5, sports hernia. The correct answer to this question is 1, hamstring myotendinous junction rupture. So this adolescent athlete in the question stem sustained an avulsion injury of the ischial tuberosity. This is also referred to as a hurdler's fracture, which occurs during excessive hamstring tension. This injury in a skeletally mature adult would most likely be a hamstring rupture. Hamstring ruptures in adults most often occur at the myotendinous junction, but can occur at other areas, including the muscle belly and tendinous insertion. Non-operative management starts with protected weight-bearing for 4 weeks, followed by physical therapy. Surgical management may be considered if the fragment is large enough to accommodate hardware and if displacement is greater than 2 centimeters. That's all for this review about hamstring injuries. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.